These comments by Deshaun Watson have garnered a lot of interest from the Browns media. And here's Deshaun talking about if he's doing anything differently this year to get ready for the football season, especially coming off the injury in the last 2 years.
Biggest thing, you're trying to, you know, get people to like you or improve, but now it's like, you know, at the end of the day, it's 2 years in, and if you don't, you know, like me or you have your own opinions, then forget it. It is what it is, you know. So I think blocking out all the noise and focusing on me and focusing on what I need to do to be the best Deshaun Watson I can be for myself, my family, and my teammates.
So between that, he said blocking out the BS. Later in the interview, he also said he could give two bleeps about what anybody says about him. And I really do understand this. But while we had talked about this on Friday, within the last 24 hours, Jason Lloyd has also written an article about Deshaun's approach to speaking on things like this. And basically, that Deshaun really doesn't have any room to talk about blocking all the nonsense because it was a self-made situation, and that there are reasons why Browns fans don't maybe have that connection, or that Browns media might still be skeptical that Deshaun is going to work out. And I think the reality is it's been really tough to be what I feel like I've been on Deshaun since day one. I've tried to be Switzerland. I do not condone nor value or respect any of the things that Deshaun was accused of, suspended for, and sued for by over 20 women. Those accusations, and it's not like, I'll be honest with you, I get sick to my stomach every time somebody has to relate to it. Well, I have a mother and I have daughters. I'm a human being. And I do not care to see those accusations, especially when it's to somebody who's afforded a very special amount of stature and honestly power within any community that they play in. But I have tried to walk the line of, I don't know what happened. I know why the Browns traded for Deshaun. I know what everybody thought of Deshaun before these allegations, the lawsuits, the suspension, all that. I know what came before. But it's not just been the off-the-field stuff. It's been Deshaun not playing well the final six games of 2 years ago, and Deshaun playing reasonably well last year, but maybe not good enough, and certainly not being healthy last year. But this whole thing was going to be tricky with Deshaun, and it's only been made trickier. If you draft a guy, and I, this is where, you know, everybody likes to compare what Ben Roethlisberger went to in Pittsburgh with what Deshaun's went through. The difference is, while Ben had multiple allegations and multiple court scenes where he was sued and tried for sexual assault, the truth is Pittsburgh had already drafted and seen Ben play. That matters. Like, if these things come out when Deshaun's in Houston and Deshaun had been a franchise quarterback, you already feel biased towards that player because you've seen the good in Deshaun, meaning like the good charitable stuff that they saw in Houston, the reason why everybody was so dismayed when Deshaun asked for a trade in the first place. And you also saw him play like a Pro Bowl quarterback for multiple seasons, really since he got to the NFL. All we have are what we've heard of Deshaun, and let's be honest, not every single one of us didn't watch every single snap in Houston. I feel like because Deshaun had Houston on the map in a way the Texans probably hadn't previously been, even though they'd won a bunch of games with Matt Schaub previously, I mean, I watched a fair amount of Deshaun. I didn't watch every single throw. Very few of us did. But so we know of Deshaun on the field in kind of a, we know in theory with Deshaun. And off the field, if you followed Deshaun since Clemson like I did, having worked in Charlotte for 4 years, and how everybody talks about Deshaun even now to this day, how everybody talks, okay, I can understand in theory how people used to think of Deshaun. So I agree with Jason. It is rich that Deshaun Watson should have any commentary on how he feels about how people have taken his legacy over the last few years. At the same point, we actually heard Deshaun talk about it. I don't think Deshaun editorialized any blame. I don't think Deshaun escaped blame. Yeah, he could have maybe taken more of accountability for his role in why his reputation has gone from beyond reproach early in his Houston days to now really just not being where he wants it or where I think Browns fans, most Browns fans would feel comfortable. So I'd also say, though, like, this is where I think we, I understand what Jason was saying in this article. And I think there's a fair amount of people that agree that Deshaun has never fully taken accountability for what got him into trouble with the NFL in the first place. And that Deshaun has not fulfilled his promise of being a quarterback worthy of getting paid $230 million. But it was always going to be like that. It was always going to be awkward. It was always going to be you and me parsing our words, trying to figure out how to talk about Deshaun Watson until he played good football. The sad reality is Deshaun Watson mishandled the PR side of things when he came here. And probably because he was listening to people who didn't, who had their own best interests and maybe didn't know their head from their ass when it came to handling a massive situation like this. For instance, usually when you go through these big boo-boos publicly, you hire a PR firm to help you save your image and rehab your image. Deshaun didn't do that. Usually, one way, and we saw this with Michael Vick, we saw this with several other people accused of Ray Rice coming off the domestic violence video that ultimately ended his career. Chris Culliver, the cornerback that was caught on tape using multiple slurs against the LGBTQ community. We saw him do this within the when you are accused of something, you basically, one PR technique is you can go out and you can actually become a face of that. And you can become involved in domestic violence, sexual assault. As with Chris Culver, you can go into and actually meet with members of the LGBT community. With Michael Vick, it was a lot of work he did with the charitable fronts on for animals, specifically dogs. There is a path there that you can rehab your image. Not entirely. There's always people that are going to make Michael Vick dog jokes. Deshaun didn't do that. And Deshaun, to my knowledge, to my remembrance, spoke and said sorry once. And it was kind of a generic preseason. It was a generic apology done in preseason. At the same point, if Deshaun had played good football the last 2 years, this wouldn't be a story. Deshaun Watson saying, I'm going to block out the BS, when it's very apparent the BS is still bugging him. If Deshaun had played like, even if he only plays 11 games, if Deshaun Watson had played like Deshaun Watson in Houston, we'd only be talking about the injury and we wouldn't be talking about, and he wouldn't have to talk about blocking out the BS. So I actually, as still trying to be Switzerland on the Deshaun Watson thing, I get that Deshaun might be frustrated with the perception of him and the media coverage of him. At the same point, you are responsible for how people perceive you. You are responsible with your actions and how you speak about things for how people perceive you specifically coming off the allegations and the suspension. At the same point, I don't think we've all been unbiased on Deshaun Watson. I feel like I have tried to separate any feelings I have with giving Deshaun ample opportunities to speak something that sounds like the truth. I don't know he's done it. I think he should do it more. When I heard that I got to block out the BS thing, I asked, okay. Doesn't matter that the BS is self-created. Yeah, I guess after 2 years of this, I'd probably be pretty frustrated too. That's a human response. But the human responses between Deshaun and the audience, or you and me and Deshaun, they've been few and far between. And I also think it's wildly human that after 2 years of bad football or bad, you know, injuries from Deshaun, that there are people in town that are sick of the narratives and just are looking for something more than what they've gotten for Deshaun. And what they've gotten is 11 games. What they've gotten is a pretty significant injury. And what they've gotten is not nearly enough honest human moments from Deshaun that 2 years in could make us all feel like we know Deshaun or that that's our quarterback. The closest I got was the Baltimore game. That Baltimore game, 14-14, we came in the next day, and I remember saying, it's the first time, because he battled. You could tell he was battling in that game. He played like crap in the first half. He figured out in the second half, and they won that game. It was like you beat Baltimore on the road. This was your moment. 24 hours later, he was out for the season. That's as close as it's come to feeling like Deshaun is anywhere near being, quote-unquote, my quarterback for the Cleveland Browns. But it all comes back to this was always going to be the case. People were going to have mixed feelings on Deshaun for every single reason. Now it's not just about what he was accused of, suspended for, and everything else. Now it is he also hasn't played good enough football the last 2 years, and he hasn't been healthy either. This was always going to be the case, and why a lot of people are putting a premature deadline on this year as a put-up or shut-up year, even though we all know this thing's going to go until Deshaun plays really well or until this contract runs out. 216-474-0092. So I did want to ask, because I'm ambivalent. I want Deshaun to play well because he is the quarterback of the Cleveland Browns, and that means good things for you, me, and every other Browns fans. I still don't feel like Deshaun speaks to me as a Browns fan, though. Does it feel like Deshaun is your Browns quarterback yet? And I want to get further into this, including how all of this impacts our expectations. I'm sympathetic that Deshaun having this, when Deshaun really was asked mostly all football questions last week, and Deshaun went out of his way to mention he's blocking out the noise and that he could give two bleeps. I can understand if you're a member of the Browns media that you roll your eyes at that, and because it does lack an understanding that the criticism that you have incurred over the last 3 years is brought on by your actions. We do not know what happened with Deshaun, and you know we know the allegations. We know, I think almost everybody has read a lot more court files on depositions on Deshaun Watson than we ever wanted to. But like, I'm empathetic if media members are a little perplexed at hearing that kind of tone from Deshaun Watson. Because, again, it does speak to a lack of culpability for his own things. And at the same point, like, guys, the longer that Deshaun got away from playing like Deshaun Watson in Houston, the harsher and more biased people were going to become to their conversation. Like, I think there is a bias against Deshaun. And I don't mean for Jason. I just mean in general, like, a lot of the critiques, a lot of the thoughts on Deshaun that I've heard sound like it starts from a place where you've already made up your decision on Deshaun the person or Deshaun the player, or both. Which, by the way, Deshaun's been here 2 years. At any point, Deshaun could have made himself more available. And when I say more available, I mean beyond his media availability. I think this is where a PR strategist would have helped Deshaun Watson immensely over the last 2 years. Because, you know, I made the point that the closest I felt to Deshaun being the Browns quarterback or my Browns quarterback is that Baltimore game. Because that game had meaning to it, and Deshaun is a huge reason why you won that game. And I think I've been a little perplexed watching people completely dissect that and say, well, that really wasn't that impressive. To me, that speaks to bias. That speaks to you've made up your decision on Deshaun. Which, again, given everything, given the price it took to acquire him, given the expectations that come with that price in his previous play, and given the off-the-field stuff, I can't really ding you if you've kind of said, I'm over this. This is not paid dividends. But that's where I think Deshaun being more responding to things more humanly, which, by the way, is exactly what he did. I don't know why Deshaun took a left turn multiple times in the press conference to say, I don't give two bleeps about what anybody thinks, when it's apparent you feel some sort of way about how people think. But that is a human moment. Like, it's ironic that we're talking about this and that Jason wrote a full-length piece on The Athletic about Deshaun's comments, because this is better than any of the, honestly, just sanitized crap we've heard from Deshaun. Like, it's funny. My favorite thing about Baker, and I'm sorry to compare these two guys, but they are the last two quarterbacks, and they have handled things wildly different. My favorite thing about Baker Mayfield is I never had to guess where he stood. I never had to worry about Baker doing the thing that annoys the living crap out of me, which is saying bland cliches that have nothing to do with how he feels. So I thought it was interesting that the thing that people loved about Baker was the thing that turned people off about Baker when Baker all of a sudden wasn't on a team that won 10 games and beat Pittsburgh in the playoffs. On the road, no less. 1 year. The goodwill with Baker in this town evaporated in 1 year. And then every team-friendly narrative, he can't win a Super Bowl. Every team-friendly narrative, he's a pain in the ass, he's immature, he's this, that, and the other. Which, by the way, I don't disagree with some of that. Every single one of those, everybody in the Cleveland media ate right up. Why? Because they won 8 games. That shows you the fickleness of this whole thing. We haven't even gotten that from Deshaun. I mean, Deshaun has won in the regular season, like, but let's be honest, when they went, 3-3, the final 6 games of 2022, they kind of won in spite of Deshaun. I will never defend those 6 games. He looked like crap. They also were having him run the Jacoby Brissett offense, which is not anywhere near what you would want to run with a player like Deshaun, but I digress. Like, that was, okay, yeah, he looked bad. Rust, time off, bad fit in the offense, all that. Last year, I'm 100% sympathetic to why he didn't look as good as he wanted, and I'm very skeptical at why people don't see that he actually played better last year. Why we have so overly picked apart those 5 games that he truly played in. I know he had the Indianapolis game as well. Played 8 plays. There's nothing you can glean from that other than he wasn't ready to play. But I think what's interesting is I still am expecting Deshaun to be Deshaun. And the reason being is it's 12 games. It's 11 games in reality. But I think the only thing that can really put the kibosh on any of this is Deshaun Watson all of a sudden losing faith in this situation. When I say that, I mean becoming defensive. Because as much as he wants to tell you and me, it's clear the BS matters. It's clear his perception matters to him, and he's frustrated at questions he's being answered, at things that are being said about him, to which I would say, well, work your role better. There's a standing invite to come on this show anytime you want to come on and talk like a human. But you're not going to do that. When it comes to, if there are people out there on social media that have been maybe approached about saying nice things, being positive about Deshaun, that's not the way you gain favor, by getting some folks, very well-meaning folks on social media, by the way, on your side. It's not how you do it. There's a playbook, and you have not run that playbook because you didn't think you did anything wrong. Okay, but that's how you get 2 years in with people. And here's the thing. The media, it's not our job to carry water for you. It's not. I think what really bugs Deshaun is that most fans don't seem to carry water for Deshaun. And that 2 years in, the blanket that is afforded to you by being the face of a franchise is not what he's being afforded to in Cleveland. And again, this is where it's get back to steps 1 through 4. Can Deshaun claim that he's done everything he should do to rehabilitate his image? No, because that starts with, hey, I've got a problem. And I don't think Deshaun ever admitted that. I'm not talking about what he got suspended for, by the way. I'm talking about he had a PR problem, which is the easiest thing. Guys, teams do this all the time. And because he didn't go and have some sort of damage control, find his Olivia Pope to manage this scandal, then the Browns, it was left up to the Browns. And the Browns did what I think is pretty obvious, which is they shielded Deshaun in every meaningful moment that you could possibly have him out there. But guess what? Those meaningful moments are moments where Browns fans can hear him and say and make a definitive expectation or make a definitive decision on what they heard from him. Hey, maybe I don't think what Deshaun is accused of can be all that true because I heard the guy and I don't hear a guy capable of the things he's accused of. And from the Browns media side of things, honestly, guys, we ran Baker out of town. This show, before I was on it, ran Baker out of town. And a lot of it was the team didn't meet expectations. So if we are to learn our lesson, I'm not talking about the media, I'm talking about we the nebulous, the Browns, Deshaun, the media fans, for this thing to work out, guys, it's just all about football. And the more we admit that, the more we realize there's not a damn thing Deshaun Watson could have said last week that would have made the last 2 years any easier, that would have decreased expectations any, taking the pressure off, if that's how you want to look at it. There's nothing he could have said. Now, and in fairness, guys, if Deshaun had walked a perfect PR beat the last 2 years, he'd still be getting an immense amount of criticism because football whitewashes everything else. Shouldn't be that way. I certainly understand if that is upsetting for you to hear that, to hear the truth of it, but it's the truth. If Baker Mayfield had played better football in 2021, he could have come out and said, I want to fist fight Kevin Stefanski in the parking lot because he's not showing up to our meetings on time, and Baker would still be here. If you had won 10 games instead of 8 games, Baker would still be here. If Baker had just kowtowed to the Browns when someone released the report that said, we need an adult in the room, by the way, not a great look. Baker would still be here. And the only thing that would have changed the last 2 years, and that will change the next 3 years, is if Deshaun stays healthy and plays at a universally accepted high level of football. I hear what Jason had to say, and I thought he did a great job of writing up what he had to say, because Jason is a great writer, and I think there's a lot of people in town who share those sentiments with Jason. I can understand the frustration with Deshaun. I can. As a human, like, you don't have to embrace what somebody has done or has been accused of doing to have empathy for somebody. His world, he was seen in this entire way, his whole life. And now that's not going to happen again unless he plays good football. And by the way, probably start doing that this year if you want to change your image. Are there things he could have done better? Yep. Can't undo that now. But like, Deshaun, if you're frustrated with the Cleveland media, you're focusing on the wrong thing, dude. And for the Cleveland media, people out there, listen, if they didn't think the 5 games last year were good enough, we know the answer. Play better. It is wild that we are here going into year 3 at this same place. But that's also why most people are sick of talking about Deshaun Watson. We know what he's accused of, what he was suspended for. We know that a fair amount of us will be absolutely hypocrites the second he starts playing lights out football. We're just waiting for it to happen.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. or if you overcame.
Two more reps.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Let's go with Will. Welcome to the show, yes. Will.
Hey, how's it going?
Going well, buddy. What you got for us?
It's just time to get excited. I mean, I've been hearing all this Deshaun Watson talk for the past couple years, and it almost feels like we're letting it get in the way of being excited for this football team. And a lot of times, like even last year, I was explaining, we had this magnificent run going, we're in and out of quarterbacks, and the whole time it's like, well, we're waiting for the other shoe to drop. We got to get out of this mode. It's football time now, you know, and I was happy that Deshaun said that because it's all about football. I'm just ready to get back to it.
Will, appreciate you. I think a fair amount of people agree with Will. You can be excited for the Cleveland Browns and maybe not love what Deshaun said. You can be sick of Deshaun's PR approach and still think he can be a good quarterback. It does sound a little moral slippery slopey of why is anybody talking about that other thing with Deshaun when he's made it a talking point as we head into football. Unfortunately with Deshaun, it won't be all about football with Deshaun until Deshaun plays well enough and stays healthy. The one time it didn't work in the entire damn history of the tactic. According to Bob Nightingale, the Yankees are in extensive talks for Tiger starter Jack Flaherty, and they plan to trade Nestor Cortez if they land Flaherty. So, of course, Flaherty was supposed to start today. He got scratched to quote-unquote protect him from trade, and now it looks like he could be on his way to the New York Yankees. That's the exact kind of move that is a little frustrating. Because, well, honestly, it's frustrating because the Yankees already have a pretty darn good pitching staff. And Flaherty adding to them makes them a tougher out in the playoffs. The other big thing is, because I think one of the narratives that has come down is, well, maybe the other teams just like the other team's prospects more than yours. So that means everybody in baseball just looks at the Guardians' prospects. It's the only team that the Mariners, their prospects good enough. Yankees, their prospects good enough. Orioles, their prospect, the Dodgers, the Cardinals. It's like everybody in baseball has good enough prospects except the Guardians, who have anywhere from 4 to 8 players in the top 100 in baseball. These prospects. It's like Steve Martin in The Jerk. When the guy pulls his name out of the phone book, starts shooting at Nathan R. Johnson, he says, oh, he hates these cans. That's what it is. It's just the prospects. It's not the people hoarding them. I actually do want a hoarders episode on the Guardians with prospects, but I digress. Follow all the news surrounding training camp and the trade deadline. 92.3 The Fan, and of course, the free Odyssey app presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile, and you can get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how online at T-Mobile.com/switch. So we still do have, listen, again, I'm not ready to completely destroy the Cleveland Guardians for not making moves yet. We have until 6 p.m. tomorrow. If you'd like to hear a fat man go nuclear, if the Guardians don't make any moves, it'll be about 5:59 tomorrow. Well, okay, we got the update. So about 6:02 tomorrow, if they don't make a move, you're going to hear from me on that one. But we'll talk with Daryl about training camp, the Deshaun conversation we're just having. But very nice weekend. Hope you guys all had your lovely weekend. Before we get to Daryl in about 40 minutes here, I went and saw the new Deadpool and Wolverine movie. And let me just tell you, get out and see it. It's fantastic. It actually surpassed all my expectations. It is maybe became my favorite Deadpool movie. Maybe became my favorite Marvel movie, certainly of the last 5 years, although that's not saying much. But for any of you wondering, should I go see it? Like, I had a couple folks that worked at the station that were like, hey, let me know how it is, because I'm on the fence. Do not be on the fence. Go see these movies. Very rarely, listen, Twisters, you guys know, I have some mixed feelings on Twisters from the time that I've seen it. But so we saw it, and Ness and I, we tried something new. We tried the date morning, because our girls are getting old enough that like they can just hang out at home. So we decided we'll go get breakfast. The movie theater in the falls does the thing that I really like. I like early movies. All right? Like the fact that I now know that they have 9 a.m. screenings, that they have 9:30 screenings, I actually can go to see movies that I want to see before work. I just have to lie to Vanessa and say, nah, I got to go into the work early. That Andy Roth, he's asking me to come in early. I got pictures tomorrow. I'm so mad. I'm as mad as you are. Secretly, I'm going to go see Deadpool and Wolverine again. But it totally fantastic. But a time-honored tactic for the first time in the history of movie going failed me. I am not one of the people who hates assigned seating in movie theaters. The only time I hate it is when somebody else has gotten there and ordered the entire row of seats that I want to sit in previously. For this early showing of Deadpool and Wolverine over the weekend, and again, go and see it, please. I demand it. But I strategically placed where Vanessa and I were going to sit in between two large groups of people on that back row. Because the math that I've always done is if there's like four people on the one side of where you want to sit and four people on the other, only separated by four seats, you take the two middle, and nobody in their right mind is going to buy one of the seats in between the two groups of people you're sitting around. Well, this person must not have been in their right mind, because I'm sitting down there and there's a big group to our left. There's a big group to our right. Actually, they hadn't even shown up yet. But this guy just walks up and I was like, oh, he must be sitting on the other side and he didn't do the thing where you walk around, right? I do not like to walk, because I have big ogre feet. I don't like to walk across a lot of people's feet because I'm very conscientious of being a fat man stomping on people's toes. But I thought maybe he just didn't realize where he's sitting, right? No, he was sitting right next to me. And it happened to be like too much. So it wasn't like, all right, so this has happened like with Twisters last weekend with the girls. We positioned ourselves right, but then a group of people bought the entire row next to us, which meant my oldest had to sit right next to somebody. Well, that was funny because it was her. The fact that it was happening to me was, and here's the thing, it's really about arm room. There's enough shoulder room in there. There's enough gut room in there. But if I want to put my arm on the edge of it, I don't want to have to be knocking into something. He immediately put down one of the king-size gulp things. Again, it's okay. It's okay. But then Vanessa and I were like, well, if nobody's to the right of us, we'll just wait. And before we could even finish that line of thinking, people came up and they were within one seat over. So one of us was guaranteed to be sitting next to somebody we didn't want to necessarily sit by. Like, I like the proximity of movie theaters. Don't get that close. All right, I want just one seat in between you and me. I love when you're two seats away. If you're three seats away, even better. But, like, I don't get mad if somebody sits in front of us or behind us. It is just that seat on either side. I want my fat man space. But the thing that I realized after looking, because I screen grabbed where the tickets were. This bastard the ticket after I bought my tickets. Meaning that he knew that he was going to be squeezed in between two different parties and was like, that is the seat that I want. What kind of sycophant, what kind of absolute psychopath buys that seat? Is it not a time-honored tradition that if there's a seat between two parties, I would never in a million years. This is like when you get a chance to where you want to sit in the theater, or sorry, where you want to sit on the plane. If there's like 25 open seats where you can have the next seat over free because there's literally nobody that's going to sit there, and you're like, I'm going to sit in the one row that already has five people in it. What kind of sick person? And like the theater was very, very full, but I will say there were plenty of spots where there were like three or four people not in a row. Have you ever had this, Mac, where when you go to buy seats, you strategically do this and somebody actually kind of calls your bluff?
Absolutely. I will.
Is this common?
You know, not often. Or at least, like, I'll try to go to showings that might be a little bit later. You know, hopefully not many people show up. You know, then at that point, you know, I get to enjoy the movie without having necessarily worry about anybody else's experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, when I pick my seat out, and I did this a few weeks ago when I went to see a movie, and I bought the second seat. I usually like the aisle seat, honestly. So I got the seat next to the aisle seat so that I could put my stuff down in the seat next to me and be able to just kind of sit back and relax and put my popcorn down.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had somebody call my bluff on that, and I bought it earlier in the day knowing damn well that there were, you know, multiple seats to the left of me, completely, you know, free. Nobody would buy the seat next to the single seat. That's it.
Yeah.
Had four people buy the seat next to me, to the left of me, and then somebody bought the seat to the right of me. And I'm just like, okay, I don't know what is wrong with you people.
I would like to know. 216-474-0092. And Nick Wilson says on social media, if you see in assigned seating that there's one seat available and you're guaranteed to sit next to other people, do you buy that seat? And if so, why do you hate people like me?